I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating at Lighthouse 26 years in business and just entering our 13th year of doing open line. We have a couple of new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2020 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. I would encourage you also to browse through the publication event tab, because we've been doing this for so long, and you name the topic, we probably have information for you that can be very, very helpful. You can also find, we also have our third book that we just completed, Cracking the High Performance Team Code, which is now available through our site or on Amazon. And we also offer remote lunchtime workshops on stress and time management, which are a huge hit, and leadership and mentoring workshops. Our topic today is managing comp costs during COVID-19. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your business. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including skills testing, 360s, interpersonal coaching, team building, remote stress and time management workshops, leadership mentoring workshops, as I just mentioned, and much, much more. We also have a program that you'll want to consider for your employees. It's our wellness assistance program, and there's no monthly fee for it. It's like an EAP without the monthly cost. It will provide the support that is needed, especially in today's time, through counseling and other various remote wellness support programs. We had one the other week for an open line as a sampling, which was how to work out at your desk, and that's just a sample of what we can offer through the wellness assistance program. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to the number of calls we get from our clients, and both domestically and globally, and we get feedback as to what topics companies are interested in, and that's how we come up with these topics like today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So go ahead and write down a couple of questions or enter them during the program if you'd like. I feel very privileged to have some very close and dear friends of ours, Terry and Larry Comp, as guests today. They're not only friends, but business colleagues, and they're both extremely cool people and have beautiful souls. They're going to co-facilitate today. They're the managing principals of LTC Performance Strategies, Inc., and will be sharing what they have learned and what they suggest as an optimal path forward. To date, LTC has helped over 875 organizations tackle their most pressing total rewards challenges. Prior to joining LTC, the comp served as corporate HR leaders for major corporations. They've completed their master's degrees, taught graduate and undergraduate business classes, served on several boards, and are well-recognized leaders within the HR and business community. I call them thought leaders. They truly are thought leaders and bring new ideas into the business community. To date, the LTC team has authored four books, including their most recent one, Executive Compensation for Today's Human Resources Leaders. I feel privileged to have Terry and Larry with us. Our program next week will be interviewing at a whole new level with Barry Deutsch. And Barry, as you've heard him before, is an amazing presenter, and he'll bring some very cool things to our program next week. But before we get there, we're going to have some amazing, we have an amazing topic today. So Larry and Terry, take it away. And just let me know when you want to change the slides.
Okay. Thank you, Dana, for the very warm introduction. And please remind our kids that we're still cool, okay? I smile when you said that.
We'll do that.
I always appreciate the opportunity to speak with your folks. And as you said, we've had the opportunity to work with almost 900 companies and along the way. And what we've learned in almost all cases is that compensation represents their biggest cost. And so that being the case, how we all manage compensation during and after COVID-19 is going to have a significant impact on our organizations going forward. So if you could please change the slide.
Next slide. Here we go.
Okay, here it comes.
All righty. So I'm going to kind of just walk through this first part of the session for us. And what I want to do is just kind of discuss briefly what it is that we're going to cover today. We're going to start by hopefully framing the dilemma, giving us a little bit of background about where we are right now, discuss the required balancing act that we always have to make in this world anyway, but certainly more so. It's a more delicate balance today than it's ever been. We're going to look at current practices, what we see some leading organizations doing and how they're responding to this really very different and challenging event of COVID-19, and then kind of discuss the pros and cons of some different strategies that we've seen our clients take and kind of best demonstrated practices in balancing those issues. So that's our game plan for today. And if you would go to the next slide, please, we'll jump right in and get started on that. So, interestingly, compensation, is it an expense or is it an investment? Just about 1 week, believe it or not, prior to our getting that safe at home, stay at home order from the Southern California area, we received in our office the HR Executive magazine that's pictured on the slide that shows some poor HR person in their jammies staying up late at night thinking about what was really a pressing worry on their minds at that time, and it was, what do you think, retention. So that was kind of the biggest nightmare that HR execs were thinking about and talking about right before we got slammed with COVID-19. At the same time, we were having conversations with different CEOs and board members in some of our client calls, and these folks were saying that their worry was basically losing their best talent. They were concerned about the really top performers possibly looking at other offers or being stolen away. So I think it's safe to say that being an employer of choice was kind of the thing that was top of mind for everybody, both HR executives and company leaders, CEOs of all types. Compensation was being seen as an investment and a way to be an employer of choice, and kind of weren't, not as much concern, not as much worry about the expense. Of course, the expense concern is always there, but we were really thinking retention, keep your best folks, and be an employer of choice. That's the background of this dilemma that we're in the present world. So moving on to the next slide, Dana. The idea of that as goes our economy, so go our priorities, basically suggesting that the expense thing took obviously center stage as soon as COVID-19 became a reality for us. Many of the companies that we work with and talk to started shifting gears as soon as we were kind of rudely introduced to this whole coronavirus thing. Some started cutting costs pretty immediately. Now, there were some companies, and you will all know some of these, especially Amazon-type organizations that were clearly going to benefit from the virus and what was going on economically. But what we saw overall, I think, the sentiments were trying to keep cost at a minimum, but doing that without destroying the culture or losing the very best people, the key people in the organization, so that the companies would be positioned to bounce back once the crisis sort of began to pass. So a very quick switch from employer of choice and employees are our biggest investment and all of that kind of thinking to this kind of really fast stop in terms of, oh, oops, we've got to look at this again. We really need to think about the cost and the expense that's involved in managing our payroll and our expenses. So on the next slide, we kind of take a quick look at some of the initial company reactions that we saw. And again, these ran the gamut, and this is just a very brief sampling of a few. These were very, very early reactions, like end of March kind of thing. This we started to see companies taking big steps right away, and one of the first was Royal Caribbean, which, of course, is in that travel industry, and we got news right away that they were laying off about over a quarter of their workforce. At the same time, Tesla announced that their hourly workers would be furloughed because, of course, they weren't allowed to be at work. And they did a really smart thing early on, which we were pleased to see, which is they instituted some salary reductions, but they did it on a tiered basis. So you might have heard about this in the news. They started at the top, and the top employees got the biggest cuts, and they were tiered as down to different levels of income. And that was their initial approach to the crisis and what was going on. And then to go to the other side of the coin, Fidelity Investments announced that they were going to boost their employee population by hiring 2,000 new employees. Again, probably as a result of the virus, more and more people interested in their money and their savings and their investments and how they were going to manage that in light of, at the time, which was a really big hit on the stock market and that sort of thing. So this is just kind of a sampling to show you, you know, what it looked like right immediately after the crisis took hold. So on the next slide, we're going to kind of take you through some survey data. Now, this is interesting. You need to know kind of his background. This comes from ERI, which is Economic Research Institute, a trusted source of compensation information. And basically, they did this survey back from April 1st to April 15th. And it was in the light of COVID-19, what are you thinking to do? What kind of changes are you anticipating? And this is data from over 600, I think, Larry, 600 and some organizations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so this is what we heard at that time. Now, remember, this was still fairly early into this whole evolving situation. So what they found out right away is that about 6.6% at that time were booming, and they said they were going to increase compensation. Probably the workload for the people that they were dealing with was really going strong and much more demanding than it had been prior to the crisis. And so 6% said they were increasing comp. 10.5% said right off the bat, we're going to freeze pay, meaning no pay increases, normal merit increases or promotions or whatever else, but frozen pay, 10.5%. And then a 14.8%, again back in April, said they were going to reduce compensation. So the takeaway here is that at that point in time, a whole bunch of people were either going to just continue on as they were for the moment, not sure, undecided about what to do, or doing some, you know, other things like hazard pay or whatever else. So there's a large majority of the people that fell into that last category, 68%. So, again, this is probably because this was really early in the whole crisis, and companies really weren't sure. And as we talked to our clients and people we know, we found that a lot of them were just really struggling. They didn't know what to do. Some of them were applying for PPP relief at that point, and were planning on doing something immediately and then possibly looking at it and seeing how things were going. So ERI has probably very wisely decided to redo or do another survey about this very topic, and they're in the process of doing that right now. So we don't have that information yet, but we know that this is kind of an evolving thing. And so we wanted to just give you a little bit of a picture of what we saw then, but it's still yet to be determined, I guess. So on the next slide, we're kind of moving towards the benefits side of the coin, so you can see that piece. And reactions on benefits are a little bit different than on the compensation side. We saw some organizations right away say they were going to freeze their 401k contributions to employees and that sort of thing. But most everyone we talked to and most of the data we read says that most organizations wanted to maintain their key coverages, especially healthcare coverages, and not do any takeaways there at all. In fact, many organizations decided to do enhancements. And we have this survey data from the National Alliance of Healthcare Provider Coalition, and they show that 53% of the people report enhanced mental and emotional programs for employees. And Dana, I was thinking about your comment about your wellness assistance program, and this is probably the type of thing that many organizations sought to and are still seeking to look at and add in this time. So we just gave you a couple of examples. One is Starbucks. They've decided to provide 20 free counseling sessions for employees and their family members.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, pretty generous. And remember, Starbucks is a kind of employer who has, you know, a ton of part-time baristas and that sort of thing, but they're extending this benefit to their folks. Target is providing a year of access to a website and app that helps with stress and worry. And Kickstand Communications is one of the companies that's offering more flexible work schedules. So there's just a lot of, I think, discussion and understanding that while working at home for some companies is a great thing, there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress out there, and people need support with that, and many of them are looking to their employers to, you know, to help, to come up with some ways that they can alleviate some of the stress and anxiety and mental health issues that have come up. So on the next slide, we flip over to a little bit more benefit info that's been made available by ERI. This is the same survey that we referenced earlier with compensation. And so it was April 1st through 15th of this year. And this shows which organizations and what percentage offered some of these additional benefits. So you can see right away that the big one is work from home, with 58.5% of the companies that participated in this organization say that they added work from home as a result of the crisis. And then you can see that there's a number of other things that were added for some, like paid sick leave or extra sick days, additional health care benefits, some dependent care, some reimbursement for other expenses that people might have. So it kind of runs the gamut here, work from home being the big thing. And again, we understand that this isn't possible for everyone. So even though it's been a choice that's a popular choice, it may or may not, you know, apply to everyone's situation. So on the next slide, we wanted to drill down just a little bit on that whole work from home thing. And this is really kind of interesting because the Gallup organization does the Gallup workforce plan, and they came out with this early in January before we ever got slammed with the corona thing. And basically, they have this study that shows that engagement was really increasing for people who were getting a chance to work at home 3 or 4 days a week. So that's a fairly, you know, that's meaning that you're working from home up to 75-80% of the time, and engagement was really, really starting to move up. And Gallup does a lot of work on engagement, as you probably know, and they connect engagement not to just having nice, warm, fuzzy feelings, but to real bottom line results. They said in the report that more than half of the people that were surveyed said they would leave their job that they're in right now if they could get a more flexible work schedule. So apparently it was a really big thing to quite a lot of people in the workforce. Now, Facebook came out and just Mark Zuckerberg was recently interviewed, and you guys may have heard this, that he announced that many of the people that are now working remotely with Facebook will have the chance to keep doing that even after the COVID crisis. And they surveyed their employees, and we took away that 40% of the people surveyed that said they were interested or very interested or extremely interested in working remotely on a full-time basis after the crisis is over. So Mark Zuckerberg says that he expects almost half or around half of their workforce will be remote within the next 5 to 10 years. He also said, and you probably heard if you were keeping up with this, that if someone decided after January 1st of 21 to work remotely and be in a city where they're not headquarters, that if they were currently in headquarters, they would have their salary adjusted to fit the geographical area where they're working. And so that's something that is, you know, subject to further discussion and study, I think.
That's interesting. I haven't heard of that before. Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of thoughts around that, and that's a whole another topic. But anyway, it's kind of fascinating that something that was moving in the direction already of being a trend, you know, this whole work from home thing, that some of us who grew up in the era of, you know, more strict corporate hours and not a lot of flexibility see that this is kind of was coming to fruition, but certainly COVID has, you know, much, it's kind of like work from home on steroids now. We're seeing real movement in all of that. So going on to the next slide, lessons learned. What can we take away from what we've seen so far? People, there are just a lot of options out there, and people are taking a lot of different approaches, and there's no easy answer, even though there are lots of different ways that you could work at this. We see and hear from clients and friends that some of the PPP money is starting to run out, and that second rounds of cuts are already underway for some people that are in that position, especially clients and friends in the restaurant industry and that sort of thing are struggling with what to do next and what to do now, because certainly it's not going to bounce back 100% with the kinds of regulations and limitations that are in effect on spacing out people and that sort of thing, social distancing. So that remains to be seen. Businesses are certainly doing their best to work overtime to kind of figure out what this new reality looks like, but impacted employees are already feeling it, certainly, and this is what we've seen and heard all around us in the news and just talking to people personally day to day. The last bullet there, I think, is the key takeaway, and we say, remember, that the how is important, is as important as the what. And what we're trying to say here is that in our experience, people are pretty darn understanding when you take the time to be honest and authentic and straightforward and transparent with them. And so if you have to have hard conversations about salaries being frozen or reduced, or some people even being furloughed or laid off, that people understand when the way that you do it, the how, is done with honesty and with compassion and with a sense of understanding what the impact is on the people that you're talking to. So how you do what you do makes all the difference. And that kind of pertains to everything, but it certainly pertains to the situation that we're in right now. So on the next slide, along those same lines, we say communication is key. Here's a few things to consider before you make some of the decisions that you might be in process with right now. Obviously, there's no one-size-fits-all perfect solution. If only we had that silver bullet. We're still looking for it. We're not there yet, but there's some good options, and we're going to take you through some of those in just a few. Involve trusted advisors. All of us have people that we can talk to, both inside team members that are key, but also some of your external advisors, especially those folks that you trust or that you know of that can give you helpful advice that's more objective. That's a really important thing. And just that last reminder that communication is everything, especially in today's world where we're doing so many things in a not in a face-to-face way. The Zoom calls and the conference calls and all of that are great, but it's really important that you kind of go the extra mile when you're communicating the kind of messages that need to be communicated in a situation like the one we're in right now. So we are still working on that day by day to make sure that we're using all the media and all the efforts that we can to really communicate even more than normal and in a very honest way throughout this whole crazy episode. And so now, Larry, I think we're ready for the next slide, and I'll turn it over to you. Oops, there we go.
Thanks, Dana. So we've gotten a lot of really good feedback from our clients on this total rewards model. And, we've spoken a lot about compensation, but as you know, compensation is not the only reason that employees leave an organization. I think if you think about yourselves, at a time when you've left one organization to go to another, it's probably one or more of these four quadrants. The two extrinsic factors at the top being compensation and benefits, and then the ones that are more intrinsic on the bottom, culture and development. So you might have a given employee that is satisfied with his or her compensation but has some concerns about benefits, and that might be a reason why they may be vulnerable to being poached by a headhunter, for instance, or compensation and benefits might be okay, but there's a concern about culture, perhaps not working well with the person's supervisor or not feeling good about the overall team. Or you can have a situation where compensation and benefits are competitive, the culture is great, but because there isn't much turnover, there's limited opportunities for promotions and career development. So we just ask our clients to take a holistic view of these four items that make up this total rewards model in their quest to becoming employers of choice. Next slide, please, Dana. So as Terry was alluding to before, there's no perfect answers to the decisions that you need to make here, but we need to realize that our decisions can have a significant effect on our ability to keep our best people. Also, that we could find ourselves making some knee-jerk or short-term decisions that can hurt us in the long term. So we've seen that. We saw that, you know, as soon as COVID hit, there were a lot of different reactions. Some made immediate moves. Some was kind of the deer in the headlights, and they're still trying to figure out what they're doing, and some have just delayed their reactions. So, again, it's the what and how and balancing the short and long-term perspective. Next slide, please, Dana. So in making the kind of decisions you need to make going forward, we ask our clients to think about the strategic purpose of each of their total compensation components. For instance, base pay and benefits are provided to employees for basically doing their jobs and helping them to maintain their standard of living. On the other hand, if a company is very concerned about driving, incenting the right performance and behavior, their best tool is typically going to be a short-term incentive program or a sales compensation program. On the other hand, now that retention is becoming more and more important, we find that long-term incentive compensation is generally the best tool for retaining your performers over the long term and also for building long-term performance, value, and attractiveness of the organization. Next slide, please, Dan. So we've been getting a lot of calls from our clients as to what to do in terms of their base salary programs and their short-term incentive plans, as you might imagine. So, you know, things like salaries, merit increases, bonuses, and there's different kinds of bonuses and sales incentive programs. So I think they need to consider, should they delay salary and hourly pay increases, which a lot of them have done. They've just said, we're not going to do anything right now. Should they defer a portion of pay and reinstate later? And we have seen some companies do that, where they're going to hold off on increases and they're going to reinstate that later. In fact, one organization we found was not only going to reinstate it later, but reinstate it with interest. And we know the organization, they're not doing very well, so we were kind of surprised, but that was what they announced to the organization. Or should they reduce pay on a tiered schedule or make uniform cuts? So I think this is important to maybe stop for a moment and realize that there's a real, there's kind of a new paradigm out there. I mean, for years, we've all read in the annual reports that employees are our greatest asset, right? And what we've been hearing the last 2 years is that's kind of changing from employees are our greatest asset to our best employees are our most important asset. And so, you know, we're seeing some organizations have just made cuts across the board, but other ones have said, no, we're going to maybe do some tiered cuts, or we're going to actually provide incentives for some of our better employees. And then the other thing is modifying or keeping short-term incentive plans. And again, those of you that have a short-term incentive plan, which is, in other words, a bonus for your employees, you could either keep the bonus plan the way it is and let things play out, or goals could be revised, provisions could be revised somewhat. Again, you have to think about the short-term and the long-term and the specific industry you're in and the market that you're competing in. All right. If you could change the slide, please, Dana. So in terms of benefits and perks, as Terry alluded to before, there's been some resistance to companies cutting benefits such as medical insurance, life insurance, disability. In fact, some have been enhancing some of those benefits, providing things like hazard pay. However, we have companies that are being pressed more and more to make cuts, and they're digging a little deeper, and they're looking at what they might consider somewhat low-hanging fruit, such as eliminating dues and subscriptions, either permanently or for a short period of time. The same thing with parking and auto benefits, maybe reducing or modifying them, and possibly modifying their tuition reimbursement program. So those are ones that we're seeing a little bit more focus on, rather than, as Terry mentioned before, the health, life insurance, things like that. All righty, next slide, please. Okay, so again, getting back to that important paradigm about employees, our best employees being our most important asset now, there is a real big focus on retaining what companies would consider their most valuable players, or those employees that if they were to leave the organization, it could really hurt them. And so they're looking at a couple different types of programs, such as stay bonuses or short-term gain-sharing plans and or phantom equity or long-term cash plans. So we'll talk a little bit about each of these. So if you can move to the next slide, Dana. Hot skills. I don't know how many of you have heard of hot skills programs. I think the first time we were asked to look at this, we were working closely with a company that we had been working with for about 17 years. And this was the time of the Y2K. For some of you may not remember that, but people thought the world was going to end. And they had folks like SAP programmers that if any one of them left, it was going to be extremely costly. So while they might have been doing layoffs or holding pay in certain areas, hot skills programs were programs where they would identify certain hot skills positions, like SAP programmers at the time or software engineers, and go to those individuals and say, we really need you to stay. And if you stay for X period of time, we're going to provide you with this kind of monetary incentive. Sometimes it was just retention. Sometimes it was a combination of retention and some type of performance criteria. So, again, interestingly, they could be offering these hot skills programs to certain groups of people while at the same time even doing layoffs somewhere else. Just again, recognizing that while we try to look at everybody as equally important, there are certain skills that companies need, certain people that just are more important players at this time. Okay, let's look at the next one. So there's a concept that you may not have heard about for a while called gain sharing. This was popular long ago when organizations, especially manufacturing organizations, were trying to cut costs, to eliminate waste. And we think this is a good thing to revisit because, for one thing, when companies are faced with these kinds of crises, they do a lot of the things that you might expect. They have closed door meetings and they just bring all the managers together trying to figure out what they're going to do, and it just tends to scare the heck out of everybody else. And they tend to forget that it's their lower level employees a lot of times that work more closely with the customers, that have the ability to really identify hidden costs or costs that could, if they're reduced, could really make an important impact on the bottom line. So gain sharing program is something that instead of doing something to your employees, it's something where you're really engaging them and announcing that you're going to offer a program. There is a need to cut costs, and maybe you'll have a theme around that, but you bring everybody together and the program may be 30 days or 60 days or somewhat longer. But the idea is to identify cost reductions, to find out where you can drive out waste, and hopefully do so in a way that it saves people from being laid off and helps the company to get back on top of things. So we've had some really good experience in this area and seen some amazing results. So that's something some of you might consider. We're also seeing, if you go to the next slide, a little bit of a more balanced focus in terms of incentives. When people think of incentives, they think about bonus plans, they think about sales commissions. It's very short-term, and I think, unfortunately, we're getting more and more short-term oriented over the years. But organizations are really trying to balance incentives between short-term and long-term. And so a lot of them have been looking and are now looking at implementing what we call long-term cash plans. And long-term cash plans work pretty similarly in a lot of ways to short-term bonus programs, except the short-term bonus program is going to be tied to performance and measurements that are 12 months or less, whereas when you're having a long-term cash plan, you're really talking about something that might be 3 years out or 4 years out. The most common are three-year plans. So what would happen would be you would identify those people that you feel are more your long-term strategic players or those people that you can't do without, and offer them participation in a long-term plan tied to, let's say, three-year goal. And then if it's what we call three-year block plan, then nothing would happen for those 3 years. At the end of 3 years, you take a look at performance and pay out rewards accordingly. Those are pretty simple to implement. They're becoming more and more popular. There are different ways we do them with our clients, block plans or rolling plans. I won't get into any of the jargon, but again, especially when you need to cut some costs now, being able to transition a little bit more of the thinking to the long term might be very helpful. So if you go to the next slide, Dana. We're going to now talk about another type of long-term plan. A lot of you are familiar with stock plans or stock option plans. They're very common, of course, in publicly traded organizations. I know a lot of the folks that are on the call today are not part of publicly traded organizations. They're part of maybe smaller private manufacturing and service organizations. And so, you know, a lot of times, I know Dane and I are long-term members of Vistage, and the question comes up about should you offer real equity? And most of the folks that are private company owners are really resistant to offering real equity, but they are open to offering phantom equity, which in a way is like long-term cash, but it's tied to an increase in the value of the company. So again, like long-term cash plans, they're typically restricted to those people that are considered long-term strategic players. But they also offer a great deal of flexibility. The only thing that you cannot have with a phantom equity plan is to allow the participant to make the decision as to when he or she takes the money out. So it's really up to the company to determine what the value is going to be tied to, and whether distributions would take place, let's say, for instance, in normal separation or a change of control, or the earlier of a change of control, or so many years of service. So we like them, and a lot of our clients have come to us for help in this area because you have almost total flexibility in designing these plans. All right. Next slide, please.
Just a few final thoughts, and then we'll be ready for some questions. Basically, like so much of what we do in the world of people and human resources, it's really a balancing act. That's the bottom line here. Certainly in a time like this, for many people, it's essential to save money, but it's also essential to think about the impact of your decisions now on the people that have helped to make you a success and on the culture that you're trying to have, which all of us hope will survive the crisis and will lead us into rebounding in the future. So it's a careful balance. And we're saying, as Larry did, that we're not going to just think about the short term, but we're going to have an eye towards the longer term implications of the decisions that we're making now, again, with the future and a rebound in mind. I think one thing that's really important is just to really do your best to nail the communication piece. That's something that no matter how much change is required in the process of responding to this, we have the ability to communicate well, to be effective, to send a clear message, to be honest with people, and to really express, if it's bad news, to express your understanding and your compassion for the position that you're putting people in and for the position that it is what it is for the company as well. So most people will hear you and really appreciate it, even if what you're saying isn't the best news. And the don't go too fast and don't go too slow. We have clients who've gone into analysis and paralysis, and by the time they come up with some kind of solution, it's way, way, way too far gone, and you have to take drastic action. So you can't be too slow, but also you don't want to have just a knee-jerk reaction without conferring and thinking about all of those things like the balance and the long-term implications. So it's important to think carefully, but move decisively once you know what steps you're going to take. And I think with that, Dana, that kind of covers the broad brush of what we've seen so far and what we think will help people move into the future. And we're ready for that final slide, which is really just to open it up for any questions.
Great. Thank you so much. I do have a question for you guys. A client of ours from many, many years ago started off as a small organization, and they gave the sales, it was a sales manager at the time, phantom stock. Then the company started to grow. It grew to 250 people. He now is the VP of sales and marketing. It grew to 500 people. Then it grew to 700 people. And what they found with this person that had the phantom stock, he was getting really lazy because he was sitting on his laurels. So any thoughts on how to prevent that? Because Terry, you made a comment about got to do careful planning on these things, and this is something that the owner didn't even consider when he issued the phantom stock. But what do you do if the guy stops producing?
Yeah.
Well, we saw the interesting situation you brought up. We've seen this with, to a lesser extent, phantom. We've seen this a lot with sales comp plans where a plan makes sense the day that you put it in, but then the company tends to grow and the owners find they're paying way more than they should have paid. I think it goes back to the design of the plan. There's what they call full value plans. There's phantom appreciation. I don't know how this was designed. It might have been a full value plan where that person's just ended up with tremendous value because the companies grew so fast. A lot of the ones that we do, we tie to value appreciation. But you know, if the organization is going to pay this person pretty well, it sounds like the organization has also done extremely well. And if the person, you know, if the person is no longer doing what he or she needs to do, they can always separate the person. You know, when we write up phantom equity programs, they're written up in such a way that the employee can leave or the organization can, you know, sever the employee. Now, they may have to make a big payout. There may be severance. You know, I don't know what the agreement says, but we just try to work closely with our clients to design those phantom plans very, very carefully and look at them in terms of a lot of different growth scenarios so you don't have big surprises at the end.
Okay. That's very, very helpful. I know a lot of people, they bring someone in with the best of intentions, and then somebody, they're hiring a new person at a pretty high level. Well, I want a part of the business, and then all of a sudden it becomes a whole discussion, and
right.
I always encourage our clients to call you guys to talk about it so they don't get stuck with something like this one client that I mentioned. I'm going to turn off the recording feature in just a minute and open up for Q&A, but I did want to first thank both of you for a phenomenal program. And also to invite everybody on June 9th to join us for interviewing at a whole new level with Barry Deutsch. But Terry and Larry, thank you for being part of Open Line. Everyone, hold the line for a moment here while I turn the recording feature off. I'll be right back.